Back to the Hardline. Enter at...
Along with former Blues enforcer Cam Jansen, former Mizzou receiver TJ Moe, John Hadley, I'm Eric Messersmith on the Hard Line, powered by Johnny Londoff Chevrolet. It's day one, the first show on the first day, broadcasting from our new Kirkwood studio. And now we're going to try to talk to our first guest on the Ryan Kelly phone line in a second. We're going to have Michael Lombardi, who is a former NFL executive. In 2016, he was on the coaching staff, or assistant to the coaching staff of the Patriots, former analyst at NFL Network, NFL.com. He now writes for The Ringer, and he'll be joining us
here momentarily. He's in Fox Sports 1 for a little while there, too, I think.
Yeah, he left Fox Sports 1 to go over with Bill Simmons. He did some podcasts on The Ringer. And
I love college football, but there's something about this first week of the NFL that just gets me extra excited. Like, tomorrow, after tomorrow, we will never have to go more than a few days without a real NFL game. We got him now. All right, on the Ryan Kelly phone lines, Michael Lombardi. Oh, we're waiting. We're figuring. You know, we're experimenting.
It is. One big experiment.
It is. It's pretty much sums like up our life. Show from the beginning, right? Yeah, Cam's whole life. One big experiment.
Experiment after experiment.
Bicurious is how we call that. Yeah.
Like call it. Well, Deke Dotum does.
It turned out okay so far. Yeah. Hadley, I know you like to experiment with a lot of things.
Yeah, he does. Truck stops, we heard, but whatever.
So,
saw Tim out there.
We were talking about Michael Lombardi.
Truck stop?
Yeah, he told me to tell you hi.
He brought his new baby.
All right, here we go. Now we have Michael Lombardi on the Ryan Kelly phone lines. Michael, how are you, sir?
I am doing great, thank you. How are you guys?
We are great. Welcome to the team. You're going to be a regular guest a couple times a week with us here in the fall, and we could not be more excited to have you on. Welcome to this crazy 590 family.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. It's exciting.
And it's exciting because we are in week one of the NFL season, about to be. Let's start with the team that you used to work for, the Patriots. They play Thursday night. And I'm interested in your thoughts on the Julian Edelman injury, that team overall. They're an overwhelming favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. ESPN, I saw today in their preview, had the Patriots a 32% chance to win the Super Bowl. No one else was more than 9. Do you consider them to be an overwhelming favorite this year?
You know, I think the two best teams are Seattle and the New England, no doubt. I think they're the two most aggressive teams. I think they're the two best run teams in football. I think the gap's a lot closer than 32-9%, frankly. I think Seattle's a really good football team. They revamped their defense. Most people get confused a little bit with Seattle. They love Earl Thomas and talking about their free safety. When you really study Seattle and you understand the histrionics behind Pete Carroll and his defense, it's about his front. And now he finally has a defensive front that he can play football with and really dominate. Last year they only had 19 turnovers as a team. That's Pete preaches the football. And you only have 19 turnovers. That's just creating one a game. That's not Seattle football. I think they will this year, and I think that's why they'll be better. As for New England, look, New England is a machine. They're very stoic. I truly believe Bill Belichick was Marcus Aurelius in another life. And, you know, they just go on. I mean, they'll miss Edelman's toughness. They'll miss his competitive nature. They'll miss his fire. Chris Hogan will line up in the slot. He'll be the new slot receiver, and life goes on.
Michael, TJ Moe here. I've been following the Patriots, as you have. I've been following your Twitter. And one thing that you pointed out was that, you know, everybody's looking at the Patriots, as Eric pointed out, that they're the prohibitive favorites and 32% chance they'll be in the Super Bowl and all that. But they've been one of the most active teams here. Over the years, they've been the team that's going to stockpile picks. Now you see them trading away first-round picks to get a Brandon Cooks. You see them trading away a second-round pick for Coney Eel, even though they got the third-round pick back. They just traded away Jacoby Brissett, who has been reported that they love him, to get Philip Dorsett. Why do you think the sudden change here? Why are they so active compared to years past?
Well, I think the depth of the draft has really gone down. I mean, let's be honest. It takes some time. And most, and ever since I've been in the league, the draft, your current draft class is never for that team. It's for the next year's team. And I think what Bill's done is he's really, you know, people like the Conan Ealy trade, he moved down 9 spots. I mean, he didn't really trade a 2. He moved down 9 spots. So the guy he would have picked at 9, he probably would have picked at the spot he had anyway. So it's a chance to get a player. I just think right now the way the cap is, we're seeing practice squad players make enormous amounts of money because they're able to, the teams have so much cap room. And they don't know what to do with it. You know, in 13, when I was in Cleveland, the big message from everybody was, well, we have all the cap room. We'll be able to get all the players. Now the playing field's level. Everybody has cap room except your former team, the Rams. Everybody has cap room, and there's not enough players to spend all the cap money on.
Michael, John Hadley, I buy 100% into what you're saying, but I also wonder if there's just not a little bit of, we don't have Tom Brady for much longer, so let's continue to roll the dice and go for broke.
Well, I think, look, their job is to win every year, John, and I think that's Belichick's mentality. But the one thing about Belichick that I think is has to be pointed out, he's all about sustainability. He never does anything to short-circuit the team in the future. You know, he's not the banker who gives a loan to somebody who can't pay it back. He's a guy who's worried about making sure the payments will come in. And I think that's really what he does. And he does it in a way to where, like this year, he traded away all those draft picks. He's got four college free agents, and they're good college free agents that make his team. And they're guys that are going to be on his team next year probably. So he finds other ways to procure talent, and I think that's what he does. But, you know, yes, he's all in, but I think he's all in cautiously, not with forgetting about the next year and giving up draft picks. No, I don't think that's what he wants to do. Look, let's face it. They had as much cap room as many of the teams in the league had. Can you imagine that? The Patriots were ranked ninth in the league going in the offseason in terms of cap room, and they had a good team. Some of these teams talk about the cap room they have, which is great, but they have a bad team.
Right.
What good is cap room if you have a bad team?
And then, of course, the Rams with a bad team and no cap room.
Their best player not inside. I mean, look, the Rams are, if you want to put a poster child on how not to run a franchise, you start with the Rams. I mean, look, I like Sean McVay. I think Sean McVay will be a really, you know, it's going to be interesting. He's enthusiastic. He's excitable. And everybody in Los Angeles is happy. He's their coach. But there's a lot of issues he's going to have to overcome that he's really not, at 31, you're never ready for.
One more question for me regarding New England, and I'll pass it back to TJ. It's like Alabama. For the last decade, you can basically say I pick Alabama to win a national championship, and you have a very good chance. And it's often very easy to say, well, I'm going to pick the Patriots to win the AFC, and you have a very good chance of being right. This year, Mike, I honestly don't think there's a logical reason not to pick them. Oakland's on the way. Kansas City's intriguing. The Steelers are intriguing. But I just don't see a team right now that I would lay a penny on to win the AFC other than New England at this point.
Yeah, I've always feared Pittsburgh. Even when I was in New England, I feared Pittsburgh because they could score. And I think that Ben's ability to make plays and their ability to match them point for point. But Pittsburgh's defense is really not where they want it to be. And I think they've made two interesting moves in the last week to show you that they're not really where they want to be either. They signed Joe Hayden and pay him a boatload of money, something that they wouldn't have done if they thought their corner situation was where it needed to be. And B, they went ahead and traded for they brought in J.J. Wilcock. They traded for him to replace Sean Jones, the safety who started for him last year as a rookie, because I think they want to improve the secondary. I think the Steelers know they need to get better on defense. They need T.J. Watt to make plays. They're going to have to find a way to slow down the Patriots, and they haven't been able to do it. I like Kansas City. I think the Raiders defensively are not where they need to be. They'll take a step back defensively. They don't have corners that can match up to New England. They don't have corners that can match up to really to Kansas City, and they don't have corners that can match up to Pittsburgh. And I think that catches them in the end. They won a lot of close games last year, John. I don't think they can duplicate that. I agree. New England is the perennial favorite. It'll be tough for them to lose.
Michael, you mentioned the Rams and their best players sitting out. That is Aaron Donald. And right now the reports are that he's willing to sit out at least into the season, perhaps the whole season. And I got to thinking about it. You have this artificial cap, and the guy has significantly outperformed. He's you know, ESPN interviewed a bunch of coaches and NFL personnel. He was the third best player on that list. And he's under contract. I get it. But what is the right answer here for a guy that, okay, you want to be in camp with your teammates, but you've so far outperformed your contract, and you've been negotiating, and there's no real answer here. The players don't have the power. What's the answer here if you're Aaron Donald? Do you sit out the whole year? And if so, can you make any progress anyway?
Well, I think the problem Aaron has is he's seen these other guys come in and get rewarded. I mean, look, when you pay Tavon Austin over $14 million, you're paying him 10 a year. He's making $14 million this year. He averages under 10 yards a catch as a wide receiver. He's got 12 touchdowns in his career. You say, well, wait a minute. How come he gets the money and I don't? When you give Tremaine Johnson a franchise tender at $16 million for 1 year, you say, wait a minute. Why is he making money and I don't? And when you bring Whitworth in, and you pay him, or you pay Robert Woods, all of a sudden you have to take care of the players. I think if you look at New England, you know, when they brought in Chris Hogan, they adjusted Julian Edelman's contract. When they brought in a defensive end, Chris Long, last year, they adjusted Rob Ninkovich's contract. When they signed Jabal Sheard, they adjusted it. So you have to be careful to not piss off your own players in your own locker room when you're out there spending money on somebody who's done nothing for your team. I think this is where Donald's complaint comes completely into place. Now, the whole collective bargaining agreement is built about the fact that you can't hold out. He's going to have to pay back bonus money that he was given for holding out these games. That's why guys don't want to miss games.
Michael Lombardi joining us, former NFL executive, writes for TheRinger.com. With all the injuries around the league at the quarterback position, Andrew Luck's going to be out, could be for a long time. Tolzien, is it Scott Tolzien's their starter, I believe? The Bills just placed T.J. Yates on injured reserve. They're going to need to start a guy I've never heard of potentially this week at quarterback. Are you surprised with all of the injuries and some ineffective quarterback situations that Kaepernick wasn't signed?
No, because I think this. I think LaShawn McCoy said it best. The disconnect with the Kaepernick situation is everybody's confused the social activism with football. Look, I'm not sure he wants to play. He's never come out and said, hey, I really want to play. That's A. B, people are saying to themselves, is the risk worth the reward? When your backup quarterback is going to get more attention than your starter, and that's what will be the case if Kaepernick signed. Do you really want to go down that road? Do you really want to have the Tim Tebow circus that comes to town when you bring a guy in? Is he better than, say, Blake Bortles in Jacksonville? No question. But he's not the starter. So he goes into Jacksonville, he becomes the backup, and all of a sudden all the attention is on him. I just think this offseason, remember, he opted out of his contract. Now, we know the 49ers would have released him. They weren't going to pay him. But there's a lot of talk in league circles that, A, he's not really enamored with playing, that he wants to be involved with more activism. And I think that this is what's going on. I think part of his play is reflective of why he's not on a team. And then part of the other part, where you get the media come in, then it becomes even more difficult. So, yeah, you know, for me, this is a tough situation, a tough answer. Is he better than some quarterbacks on rosters? Yes. Is he better than Brock Osweiler? Yes. But, you know, then what he brings also creates problems, and teams won't avoid him.
Michael, I saw you had some interesting thoughts on the current Eagles head coach, Doug Peterson. This was on...
That's not what they're saying in Philadelphia about me, by the way, my hometown. They're not saying that. They don't think it's interesting. It's funny. Philly's a great town. They're allowed to be critical of their coach, except you aren't.
That's right. I want to read your quote exactly from... You retweeted this earlier. It was on The Ringer. Now, everyone knows Peterson isn't a head coach. He may be less qualified to coach a team than anyone I've ever seen in my 30-plus years in the NFL. He was barely a coordinator before he became head coach. The Eagles looked increasingly sloppy and unprepared as the 2016 season went along. When will the Eagles admit their mistake? And then you went on to say Carson Wentz started the season fairly well. He threw 7 touchdowns before his first interception. And then after week 4, the rest of the season, he had 9 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. So obviously you're not a big fan of his. What is it that you're seeing that you're saying, I mean, he's just not fit to coach and go ahead and get rid of it now? And how would that? You're talking about Philly and how crazy they are as fans in that city. How would that go over giving up on a coach this quickly?
Well, look, I mean, when he challenged a 2-yard game with the Packer game last year, I bit my tongue and I didn't say anything, and every coach makes mistakes when it comes to challenges. But I think if you just study this Eagle team, the first 8 games of the season, they average over 6.85 yards per attempt down the field. The last 8 games of the season, they average under 6, really significantly under 6 at 5.73. They throw 7 touchdown passes in the last 8 games, okay? Then you just start to break down the things that he can really do. Okay, first drive of the game. The Eagles are one of the worst teams in the league. They're 26th in the NFL in first quarter points. To me, the NFL is about starting fast, getting the lead. The best teams in the NFL get the lead at halftime and keep it. The two best teams, Atlanta, New England. New England was first. And so these little trends that come into play, you say to yourself, they're just not there. And look, the guy was, they say he was the coordinator in Kansas City, but he didn't call plays. He's had 4 years of never calling plays. This is his first job. And the NFL is not friendly to be on the job training. I mean, you know, you just don't go from being a quality control coach to calling plays in the NFL. And I just feel like when I watch the Eagles, I think there's a lot of attention to detail that goes missing. The Eagles were, and this to me is really, when I watched them play this summer, Carson Wentz played 50 plays. He barely played in the summer. You know, you got to play in the opening game against the Redskins. You got to get your team ready. And I think what Doug was doing was he was just trying to get his team healthy for the opener. And then the most important factor to me is attention to detail in the kicking game. I don't see it. When Chip Kelly was there, they were only 11th in penalties. Last year with Doug Peterson, they're 24th. Things are slipping, and it's going to keep slipping.
Mike, I have one more question for you, but I also wanted to get a rundown on the Ringer this year. I know you'll be doing some podcasting, obviously, articles, but give us a taste of what we can expect on a week-to-week basis during the football season with the Ringer.
Well, I'm going to do, John, I'm going to do a podcast twice a week. I'm going to break down some games before the games. We're going to analyze some games, kind of like break down games after they happen and kind of try to explain the game in a unique way. And then we're going to do these little videos that I think you've seen up on Twitter, the one I did with Doug Peterson, trying to explain the game and try to be more interactive. I'm not going to write as much because I've been working on my book, but I'm going to do a lot of videos and a lot of podcasts to keep up on the NFL and just pay attention to it. To me, fans want instant information, and what they found is about an hour after a game, people want to talk about the next game. They don't want to talk about the game that was just played.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that big time. Hey, switching to the NFC real quick, I feel the exact opposite with the NFC than the AFC. I too like Seattle. I personally like the New York Giants an awful lot, but in total, I would not be shocked to see any one of a half dozen teams wind up winning the AFC East. The AFC, I'm sorry. I'm not going to say it's
NFC,
completely.
The NFC, yes.
NFC. Whatever. Mike knows what the hell I mean.
I'm going, John. Don't worry.
Mike's learned to
decipher. Four teams in the AFC East. You think six can win.
Mike's learned to decipher me. The NFC, I just think, is pretty much wide open. Again, do I expect the Saints to win? No. But would I be shocked? No. I'd just be curious to get your take on the NFC.
I think the NFC is really good. I think just look at the South. I mean, you know, Tampa signs T.J. Ward. I think that was a player they kind of need for their team. T.J. gives them some veteran experience, a guy who's been to the Super Bowl, has been to playoffs, and I think he can help that locker room educate them on what it's going to take to become a playoff team, because it's one thing to be a good team, it's something to be a playoff team. I think the New Orleans is much better on defense. I think Atlanta, I don't know if Atlanta could duplicate what they did last year. The season that Matt Ryan had last year was remarkable. I mean, averaging over 9 yards per attempt is just really amazing. I don't know if he can do it. It's not a disrespect to Steve Sarkisian, but to me, replacing Kyle Shanahan is going to be the hardest thing to do. And I think that the South is really loaded. I think when you look at the West, I love Seattle. I think Seattle's a really good team. You look at the East, I think the Cowboys can be a good team, whether the Zeke Elliott thing gets resolved. I think the Giants have to prove they can score more than 16 points. I'm waiting to see where the guru and Ben McAdoo starts to be ruined, because they got to score more points. They average 16 points a game. They have all these explosive weapons. They have what many people think is the greatest receiver in the history of football, and they can't seem to get more than 16 points a night. And I think that's going to come down to the challenge. Can Washington get back into it? I don't think so. Philadelphia, I think Philly's good on defense. I think Philly, Carson Wentz. Do you realize Carson Wentz is under 50% as a thrower when he throws the ball over 10 yards in the game? That's not good. And so I think there's some areas where Eagle fans tend to overlook and don't want to pay attention to, because reality does hurt. So I like Seattle. I like the South. And then when you look at Green Bay, how can you ever not think Aaron Rodgers? I mean, Ted Thompson has changed his modus operandi. He's signing players in free agency. He's claiming guys off the wire. He signed Ahmad Brooks. I think Green Bay's changed a little bit of who they are, and I think they'll still be very good this year.
Last thing before we let you go, Michael, I know you follow the college game closely, and I saw you tweeting about Josh Rosen and that incredible performance, UCLA versus Texas A&M there. If you are starting an NFL franchise today, and these guys are all coming out in the draft next year, you've got Sam Darnold at USC, Josh Rosen at UCLA, Josh Allen, the guy at Wyoming who didn't have a great performance this weekend but has been well thought of, or Lamar Jackson, who are you taking?
You know, my son worked at Louisville for 3 years, so I've seen a lot of Lamar game. I like Lamar. I think he's gotten better as a passer. I think Sam Darnold is really good. I thought Rosen played well when the pass rush kind of slowed down and he could get control. I thought Josh Allen, that was a big game for him. He needed to play to the level of comp. You know, my answer would be Sam Darnold, probably, although I really like Lamar Jackson. I think he throws it better than most people think, and I think he can be explosive with the ball in his hands. He won the Heisman. I mean, last week it kind of was not talked about, but he had a great week last week, and nobody's really talking about it because Darnold didn't play well. He's playing against Western Michigan. You know, Rosen had a hard first half against a really good Texas A&M defense that got tired. Josh Allen didn't play as well. But I'll tell you, the best quarterback I saw last week was the Stephen Calvert kid from Liberty. He went into Baylor, and he put over 400 yards. He was impressive as a sophomore. I mean, so there's one thing I like about college football today. There's a lot more passers than ever was before.
Yeah, it's an exciting game for sure. And we are excited, Michael, to be talking to you twice a week during the football season. Thank you so much for the
Thank
time.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, writes now for TheRinger.com.
Man, he's great.
We love him. It's going to be so cool having him here twice a week during the season. The 15th Annual Complete Auto Body Repair Charity Golf Scramble is at beautiful Floors and Golf Club. It's presented by Fox 2 and Midnight Auto Supply. It is this Friday, September 8th. Complete Auto Body is hosting the 15th Annual Golf Tournament to benefit Responder Rescue and the Backstoppers. So far, this event has raised over $230,000 for these great charities, but are still in need of more sponsors. If you want to sponsor a cart, donations of any kind are welcomed. Whole sponsorships, even a $10 donation, goes a long way. So sign up your business today by calling Complete Auto Body at 314-731-7999 or visit them at CompleteAB.com. Guys, let's also talk about the Kirkwood Brewhouse, because one cool thing about being here in Kirkwood with our studio is we get to eat all the time now at the Kirkwood Brewhouse right downstairs.
I am starving. Smell it right now. It's unbelievable.
If you haven't gotten the salmon yet, you're wasting your life. And I'm not a big salmon guy myself. It's just not really my thing. But, oh, my gosh, I don't go over there without getting now.
And their burgers are fantastic.
And the candy bacon. Hot dogs are great.
Which they don't even sell them. He buys hot dogs from a gas station and brings them there to eat it for some odd reason.
Quick point there. You don't have to go down a single stair to get from here to Kirkwood Brewhouse.
I know, Rock. I saw you giving me the eye. Okay, we are level with Kirkwood Brewhouse. Mm. Our corporate offices are downstairs.
We can make stairs. Yeah.
You have to de-ramp a little bit, slightly.
Yeah, you step down a ramp to go inside, I guess.
You know what else they have, Cam, is beer.
Yes,
I know you like beer.
Yes, I do.
And they have 23 Missouri-crafted beers on tap.
Yeah,
with a beer theme menu.
I've tried all of them, pretty much.
And now that we're here, it's not just Hadley that's going to be there all the time. We're going to be there all
the
time as well. So come on, see us. We are. We'll be there maybe later tonight.
You are where you're at.
Kirkwood Brewhouse. You are where you're at. And this is The Hardline, powered by Johnny Londoff Chevrolet on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.